Hello and welcome to Natasha Explains It All. Today's episode is part of a series I do from time to time called Book Report, where I share a novel that I have read that I've really enjoyed and so wanted to make that recommendation to others. And in addition, to share some of the thoughts and concepts that the novel has raised for me and to share those and then additional resources as well related to what the novel has brought up for me. So today's book report is a novel called Olga Dies Dreaming by Xochitl Gonzalez. And Olga Dies Dreaming is what I would categorize as historical fiction, which might be a little bit funny because the novel is set in 2017, so it's really not that long ago. But I would consider it historical fiction, which happens to be my favorite genre, because while this is a fictional novel about fictional characters, the historical context in which this novel is set really matters for the plot and the context in which the various characters live their lives. So Olga Dies Dreaming is set in New York City in 2017, and it focuses on a Boricua family. So Boricua is a term that Puerto Ricans use to refer to themselves. And Puerto Rico, as you may know, is one of the territories of the United States. So it is not a state, it is a territory, and I'll get into that a little bit more later. And it focuses on a Puerto Rican family living in New York City in 2017. And focuses particularly on a pair of siblings, Olga, as the title refers to, and her brother, Prieto. Olga is a wedding planner for Manhattan's elite, and her brother, Prieto, is a U.S. congressman who represents a part of Brooklyn that is rapidly gentrifying, and one of the threads in the novel is about his role in that and what that means. And the novel is, it's a really wonderful read. It's funny. It's engaging. It's very much a personal story about this family and the various generations of this family and work and romance and family and intergenerational divides. And as I was mentioning, really the historical context, it is set in this broader historical context about what does it mean to be American? What does it mean to be Puerto Rican? What does it mean to be Puerto Rican living in the continental United States? Because Puerto Rico is part of the United States, but it is outside of the continental United States. And also in 2017, when this novel is set, Trump is in office. Trump is the president of the United States at the time. And in 2017, a devastating Category 5 hurricane hits Puerto Rico, Hurricane Maria. And these historical events are part of the backdrop of this novel and raises issues within the family about, you know, how to approach these contexts and what to do about them and what does it mean, like what does it mean to be Puerto Rican? What does it mean to be Puerto Rican enough? What does it mean to be American enough? And I think certainly, I can relate to this from my personal experience being in a multicultural household. I think those questions of like being enough and what does it mean to be patriotic? What does it mean to identify with each part of your each part of your heritage, each part of your identity, each part of your culture? And when is it enough and when is it not enough? And, you know, the characters struggle with that as well in being Puerto Rican, but you know, they don't live in Puerto Rico itself, and they haven't spent a lot of time in Puerto Rico, and a lot of people have that experience. Their parents are from elsewhere, and they look like they're from that place. Their whole family's cultural context is from that place, but they themselves maybe have never been there, or maybe they don't speak the language from that place. And so there's this just like additional layer of struggle of from Americans seeing them as other, but then from that other place, from the motherland, then being seen as Americans and living in this in between that's truly, you know, you know, you can never satisfy everybody. And there's just this intermediate place where folks like Olga and her brother exist. And that is something I can relate to. And so in talking about the historical context that this novel is set in, I mentioned Hurricane Maria. And one of the things that this backdrop made me think about is that, you know, the novel talks about a little bit about, you know, the really poor response of the U.S. government when Hurricane Maria struck. FEMA is a U.S. federal agency. It's the Federal Emergency Management Agency. They are supposed to respond when there are natural disasters, like things like hurricanes. And FEMA did a really terrible job with Hurricane Maria, a lot of that provoked by the Trump administration's, you know, complete lack of interest in caring about Puerto Ricans, Puerto Rico. And there's a lot of parallels, not only to how the George W. Bush administration handled Hurricane Katrina back in the early 2000s, but also it made me think about the fires that happened in Maui just last year. So if you recall, in 2023, in Hawaii, there were some really devastating fires that happened in Maui. And it displaced a lot of people. A lot of people lost their homes. And to this day, there's still a lot of fallout from that. Things have not returned to normal. And there are a lot of parallels to what... there are a lot of parallels to what have happened between what is discussed in Olga Dies Dreaming and Hurricane Maria, and then the response to the Maui fires in Hawaii last year, in the sense that rather than prioritizing recovery for local people, these events have led to a massive land grab by private developers to buy up on the cheap the land that has been burnt out where a lot of people lived so that they can develop that land into hotels and other luxury properties. And there's a lot of questions about the ethics of that and, you know, and who gets priority. And the exploitation that happens after a natural disaster, which as a separate book recommendation, if you're interested in learning more about that and the concept of what is called disaster capitalism, I highly recommend the novel, or it's not a novel, it's just a work of nonfiction called The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein. The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein. And she talks about this phenomenon, and Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana is one of the examples that she points to. There's a lot of parallels here. And so, you know, getting into the issues of development and climate change, you know, this novel talks about them, and like who gets dollars for investment, who gets prioritized. And it's a struggle that is very much still present in places like Puerto Rico, in places like Hawaii. I was just reading that in Hawaii, there is active legislation being proposed and being discussed to ban short-term rentals in Hawaii. Short-term rentals meaning companies like Airbnb and Vrbo. And the reason for that is that they have really devastated the local housing market, because a lot of the properties are now, you know, exclusively for short-term rentals, which has decreased the local housing supply. And with the, you know, less of a supply, then the prices for the remaining housing, both rental units as well as units to buy, have gone up. And it is pricing a lot of Native Hawaiians, or people who have been there for many generations, out of the market. And there are a lot of people who were displaced by the Maui fires who still have not been able to be rehoused. And so there is that active debate happening, you know, because a lot of people are building second homes, vacation homes in Hawaii. And at the same time, there are a lot of local residents who aren't able to afford housing. And a very similar issue is happening in Puerto Rico. And Puerto Rico and Hawaii are both struggling with that narrative that, like, our economy depends on tourism. We, you know, we need people to come in, and that's the one part of the narrative. Another part of the narrative of locals is like, please don't come, because, you know, because of the, you know, something I heard from a surf instructor who is based in Maui was, you know, sometimes the locals like can't even have hot water because the hot water is reserved for the tourists at the hotels and things like that, right? Who gets resources? And that resource allocation is also present in Puerto Rico. And there's also debates in Puerto Rico around Airbnb and other short-term rentals and whether that is ultimately a plus or a minus because it is pricing locals out of the market. And on that note, if you are interested in learning more about those topics and certainly just learning more about Puerto Rican news more, because it's definitely not something that is taught that much in U.S. schools, definitely not something that's talked that much about in U.S. mainstream channels, I recommend following an independent reporter on social media named Bianca Gralau. Hopefully I'm pronouncing her name right. Bianca Gralau. I follow her on Instagram. I will put her handle in the show notes. But Bianca Gralau, which is just at Bianca Gralau, she's Puerto Rican and she's an independent reporter and she covers a lot of these topics. And she, a lot of her coverage is in English. So in case you don't speak Spanish, because she does reporting in Spanish as well because she's Puerto Rican, but she does a lot of her coverage in English. So it is accessible to an English-speaking audience. She does a lot of coverage on these topics. And so if you would like to learn more, I would highly recommend checking out Bianca's work and supporting her. So going back to Olga Dies Dreaming, you have this sibling pair and them, you know, navigating life in 2017 and their identities and both their personal and professional ones. And another aspect to this is, yeah, like how different generations respond to identity and the need to like support the cause and what is the cause. Because in Puerto Rico, for example, like there is a lot of debate about statehood as well, which is something that comes up in Hawaii as well. Because there are Puerto Ricans who support Puerto Rico becoming truly independent and no longer being a territory of the United States, while there are others who, you know, would like things to remain as they are, and there's others who would like to remain a territory, but you know, have more rights or would like to become a state. Like there's all different positions. And so on that quickly, as I mentioned, Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. So it's not a state, it is a territory. And there are different laws and rules and privileges and rights that apply because of those statuses. And so Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens, but there are certain rights and privileges that are different. So for example, Puerto Ricans don't vote for U.S. president. So even though the president of the United States has the ultimate say over what happens in Puerto Rico, Puerto Ricans don't have the right to vote for president, which is anti-democratic. Now, Puerto Ricans don't pay federal income taxes. And that is an interesting aspect in contrast to D.C., because the District of Columbia is not a state either. It's not a territory. It's a district. And D.C. residents do pay federal taxes. And yet they don't have voting representation in Congress. They do vote for president, but they don't have a voting member in Congress. Puerto Rico also doesn't. They have a non-voting delegate in the House of Representatives. And so I'm just scratching the surface in terms of the dynamics of what it means in the 21st century for the United States to still have territories. So places where U.S. citizens exist, territories like land that the United States law applies to, and yet the citizens of those places don't have the same rights and privileges of people who live within the 50 states. So I'm just skimming the surface on that, but it is something that this novel talks about and, you know, piqued my interest. And again, Bianca Gralao, the reporter, gives you a lot more insight into this. And, you know, as I was looking up the issue of territories as well, I learned, I didn't know this, that the U.S. has 14 territories around the world. I didn't know that. I thought the number was much lower than that. But perhaps forgiving of me is that a lot of them don't have local populations, or at least are not currently inhabited. They're military bases, basically. So the ones that have a permanent local population are only five, which are the main ones you may have heard of. In addition to Puerto Rico, it would be American Samoa, Guam, Northern Mariana Islands, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And again, all the others, the other nine, are basically military bases. And it's interesting also that you have a situation where you have Puerto Rico that has this kind of second-class status in the U.S. Legal and political system. And yet, like, Puerto Rico has a lot more people than a lot of U.S. states. I saw a statistic that said, well, the population of Puerto Rico is over 3 million people, well over 3 million people. And that is larger than the population of 21 of the 50 states. So, you know, reflect on that, of how a place that has so many people has so much less representation than many other states that have fewer people. And certainly could be argued that that is quite undemocratic. And that in itself is an argument for, like, why the Senate is not a democratic body, because in the Senate, every state has two senators, regardless of population. And the Senate was created out of a compromise with states in the South that allowed for slavery, and it was a way to give them more political power. And it raises, like, related points around, like, the three-fifths clause, which is how populations for states were counted. And if you're not familiar with the three-fifths clause, which is fortunately no longer part of the U.S. Constitution, but was part of the U.S. Constitution for a very long time, which basically said that every enslaved person counted as three-fifths of a person. And as a result of that, southern states where slavery was legal basically had inflated population numbers that they then used to have more seats in Congress, specifically in the House of Representatives, because the House of Representatives is based on population. But of course, that's completely racist and insane and anti-democratic system, because not only are you not counting enslaved people as full people, you're counting them as three-fifths of a human. They also don't have voting rights. So you are magnifying the voting power and the political power of the white minority in those states. And things like the Senate, the Electoral College, continue to amplify that. And so the additional layer of the U.S. having territories that are populated with local populations like Puerto Rico that do not have the same type of political power that those who live in the 50 states have raises some very important questions of democracy. Anyway, so Olga Dies Dreaming, highly recommend. It's funny. It's really interesting. It's a fun read and just wonderful, rich look at questions of identity and family. And I want to read the last sentence of the jacket of the book because I think it encapsulates the novel very well. And it says, quote, Xochitl Gonzalez's Olga Dies Dreaming examines the very notion of the American dream, all while asking what it really means to weather a storm, close quote. So a couple of final things before wrapping up this episode. You know, I was mentioning before that, you know, mainstream news does not really cover Puerto Rico that much. Certainly, that has been my experience. And I would say that that's starting to change in some aspects. One, because of music. You may know the artist Bad Bunny. He is like the top reggaeton star in the world. And he is Puerto Rican. He's very... he is very open and promotes Puerto Rican culture. He sings exclusively in Spanish and he is like a global phenomenon, and he is helping to put Puerto Rico on the map and help Americans who live in the continental United States like understand more about Puerto Rico and Puerto Rican culture. And on that note, another person that I would recommend, if you are interested in learning more about Puerto Rican culture, but even more specifically about the Boricua experience in New York, particularly in New York City, as is the case with Olga Dies Dreaming, is an actual person. Her name is Elizabeth Velasquez, and she's an author, she's a poet, and I will put her handle in the show notes as well. And her handle is just Elizabeth Velasquez Poetry. And she is the author of the book When We Make It, which is all about the Boricua experience in New York City. And I don't know, actually, I'd have to look this up, if the largest population of Puerto Ricans outside of Puerto Rico is in New York City. But if it's not the top spot, it's definitely one of the top spots, because there is a very large Puerto Rican community in New York City. And Elizabeth's experience and her novel and her poetry speak a lot to that. So that would be another source that I would recommend. If you would like to, if you like Olga Dies Dreaming and want to learn even more. So that is enough for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Olga Dies Dreaming by Xochitl Gonzalez. If you do happen to read it, please let me know. What were your thoughts? If you also enjoyed it or didn't, or have certain critiques, would love to know. So thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.